Quick shout out to our sponsor, Bruce's Cafe and Wynyard. Terrific food, great coffee, great staff and service. Do yourself a favour. If you've got 10 minutes today, you're in the area, pop in, have a coffee, tell them Mike sent you.
Hi, it's Mike here from Better Off Dad. Next time you want to catch up with friends for a few drinks in a prime location, head to Buttons Brewing in Ulverston. Buttons Brewing is a family-owned brewery producing small-batch beers for the people of Tasmania's Northwest. Not only do they do tasty beers, but they serve them at their own bar and restaurant, along with burgers, pizzas, live music, and laughter every weekend. You are listening to Better Off Dad, a podcast featuring three guys with 10 kids between them, stumbling their way through dad life. I'm Mike, an American voiceover guy trying to make these idiots sound professional. So here are your hosts, Shannon, Nathan, and James.
Welcome back to Better Off Dad. You're here with Nathan, flying solo today for the first time. My co-host has deserted me. As most of you know, Shannon's over the UK, starting a new life over there with his young family. He's been in regular contact. He's going well. They've arrived safely. I'm a little concerned because both the twins slept for 17 hours on the plane and he's been talking about Finnegan for the last few weeks. So hopefully everything's above board there and there's nothing to worry about. But James is only about 500 metres away actually working on our new home, which is we're getting the keys handed over next Thursday. So I wouldn't give him an hour off to come around here. I am here with a very special guest though, and joining me today is Mitch McPherson. Now, most of our listeners will be aware of Mitch and his work. He's the founder of Speak Up, Stay Chatty, which is a highly successful suicide prevention charity, which was started in honour of his brother, Ty. I'll let Mitch explain that a little more about what Stay Chatty is all about and how it started. But he's also the very proud father of one, and that is the main reason, one of many reasons we've asked Mitch to come on the podcast. Welcome, Mitch McPherson. How are you, mate?
Thanks heaps for having me, mate. I'm really well, getting close to Christmas. So, yeah, things are busy, but good. Good to be here.
It's a busy time of year, mate. Are you one of those people? I think there's two sorts of people around this time of year. They're either winding down a bit or really in the middle of absolute chaos. So how are you tracking?
Yeah, definitely in the middle of chaos. There's a lot going on here work-wise, but then, there's lots of events and Christmas parties, and it's all about staying healthy this time of year, I think. There's a fair few festivities on at the moment, so I still try and eat well and get some exercise in where possible, because you don't want to go downhill so close to Christmas. So, yeah, very busy.
It's easy to go the other way too this time of year, mate. You're right. There's a lot of functions on. You guys just had recent Stay Chatty Ball. That was a big hit.
Yeah, it was again. Yeah, our seventh one, which was awesome. We had it scheduled for when the snap lockdown happened down here. So, look, that wasn't ideal the day before to can it. But, we were able to have it 2 weeks later. And, amazing event, well supported, and raised a lot of money, which was good. But also good to see the back end of a big event like that. But, you know, already we're planning next year. So, it was good fun.
Yeah, and what about the little one, mate? Is Christmas all a little bit too much for her? Because our daughter's, my youngest is a very similar age, about 20 months. Is that correct?
Yep, spot on.
Yeah, so a little overwhelmed with Christmas, just starting to get the idea of it, pulling the lights off the tree and not 100% sure what's happening as yet.
No, not quite yet. I think next year will be a lot more exciting, but yeah. This year is certainly a lot more exciting than what last year was. So, what I love about it is seeing my wife loves Christmas, and it's been fun for her to, dress the tree up, and obviously I help where I can, but it's great for me to see, my wife as a new mum to be really excited about it. So, it's going to be a special time.
Christmas, the big family traditional Christmas, or keep it a bit more low-key, or how do you guys plan?
It's pretty low-key, to be honest. Try and see both families, mum side, dad side, and then obviously my wife's as well. So, there's a fair bit of driving usually involved. I don't ever want to look past Christmas, and it's going to be a great celebration. But with borders opening, all my mates and got a really big day. Looking forward to a great day with a heap of my mates on Boxing Day. So, Christmas is going to be amazing, but I'm certainly looking forward to a good old-fashioned boys' day on Boxing Day with all the boys.
Speak Up, Stay Chatty. A lot of our listeners would be aware of what the program's all about. A lot would have heard you speak about it, or would certainly be aware of the bumper stickers on every second car in Tasmania and things like that. But there are some listeners that wouldn't know anything about it, mate.
Yeah, Stay Chatty is a mental health and suicide awareness organisation that I founded in sort of mid to late 2013. As you mentioned, my little brother Ty took his own life at the start of 2013, and that was, obviously a really difficult period for our family, and still is. But in that initial shock and time when we lost him, it was a mix between, you know, pure devastation and not knowing what to do. And that for me sort of turned into wanting answers and starting to want to learn a little bit more about mental health. You know, my background was in the trade, and I played footy and, you know, a bit of a lad, but I realised pretty quick that whilst I had a really close relationship with my little brother, it wasn't deep enough to have ever asked him how he was going or to realise that he was going through a difficult period. So I sort of went from feeling like there were no signs at all in him that he was struggling to actually learning a little bit about it to recognise that, hey, there were some signs in him that he wasn't okay, and you know, battling along, trying to support family and support everyone around us. I think it was sort of one afternoon about 4 months after we lost him where I got home and I just sort of thought, you know, there's so much misery and sadness around our family right now. And, look, at the end of the day, you know, everyone grieves and it's an awful time, but something sort of came over me to tell me that, you know, you'll never ever bring him back. No matter how much you cry and get upset about it, nothing can change, you know, where he is right now. And I suppose that sort of started channeling my thinking to look towards the future and think, well, maybe if we start sharing a little bit of our story and our lessons, we might be able to, you know, help another family, and maybe our learnings will open up the eyes to someone, unfortunately, like it didn't do for us. So, yeah, I sketched the idea of the car sticker and, like you said, a little pair of footy shorts, which is pretty well known around Tassie and spreading around the country now, which is something I'm really proud of. It was a tribute to my little brother. He loved wearing footy shorts without any undies on, so that was a great way to, you know, pay tribute and have a bit of a laugh about him. But most importantly, I started to learn more about it and started to really be, you know, put myself out there on a public stage, if you like, through my social media and share our story of devastation and how much we'd learned. So it sort of took off from there, you know, more awareness raising, started to do a bit of public speaking. And look, it baffles me that it's been 8 years now working full time on this stuff. We've got an amazing team of 8 programs in schools, sporting clubs. You know, I fly around the country or do it virtual lately of sharing my story, and I've done it over 900 times. And it's a world now where I found passion and purpose in my life in doing what I do, and I absolutely love it. But look, at the end of the day, I wish I knew half of what I know now about mental health. I believe that, you know, would my little brother still be here? I can't categorically say yes, but I know that if I checked in a little bit more or recognised a bit more how he was going, it would have given it a hell of a lot more of a shake than what we did. So, that's who we are and what we do, and quite a well-recognised organisation that's, you know, incredibly well-supported here in Tassie. And, as I said, I'm just really proud of who we are and where we've come. And I'd like to think that I'm a really good example of out of devastation, some good things can come of it. And it's certainly been through a lot of hard work, but also so much support from people all over the place, which, as I said, I say the word, I'll probably say the word proud another 100 times, but I just really am of ourselves as a family and friends, but also the people that have supported us.
Yeah, what I love most when I first heard you speak and present, Mitch, was part of it being so simplistic about it's about talking, isn't it? It's about talking to your mates and talking to your family and asking how they're going and things like that. I invited you to my workplace in May, early this year. It's when I first met you, and had you down. And I could not believe – I knew it would have an impact, but I could not believe the impact that it had. I was having guys come out to me, and these are pretty rough and tough guys that you wouldn't expect to sort of come up and just come up and shake my hand and look me in the eye and say, thank you for that. And you could just tell that they might have had some mental health challenges themselves or – were indirectly involved through family members or friends or whatever, but affected in some way. And just to see that impact on them, that people just got so much out of it, mate.
Well, that's great to hear. And I mean, tradies and blokes, look, Stay Chat is not aimed at that, at males or that any particular demographic, but, you know, it's probably my favourite audience to stand in front of a group of blokes as a former tradie and a bloke that, you know, kicked a footy around to say, look, I didn't give a shit about this stuff, and I wish to God that I did. And I truly believe in the power of lived experience, and I wish that a Mitch or someone like me years ago had stood in front of me and shared a similar story, because I really believe that it would have, you know, perked me up and opened up my eyes a little bit to the reality of mental health and the reality of how devastating suicide is. So look, I know that I deliver it safely. It is a bit confronting, but at the end of the day, I want people to sit and hear my story and think, I never ever want to walk in those shoes, and so I'm going to get off my ass and actually do something that will might help myself or someone around me. And yeah, if we're having a good impact like that, mate, then yeah, that's good to hear. We're making a difference.
Oh, and I think that's part of the strength of it, Mitch, is that you are a relatable guy. You know, you are, I guess, coming as being a bit of a lad and a tradie, people can relate to that because I think my perception of it is at times that some people think of mental health as if somebody else's problem or it's affected somebody else, you know, but it really hits home when you hear it from you about your story and it's something you should be really proud of, mate, because the impact was huge down at work.
Thank you, mate.
How are you? How's your perspective on mental health? Has it changed since becoming a dad?
Yeah, definitely. I think, look, I've always been, you know, my brother was 18 and there's no doubt that I've had a soft spot, if you like, for the youth of today and everything I do around Stay Chattier, there's always a real soft spot there to think that this will benefit the youth of today and the next generation and wishing that I'd done more or that we'd all done more back in the day for young people. I mean, we know the stats around young people and how they're struggling and all these societal issues that are being raised and jumping out at us every day, but there's no doubt they're going to continue to face more challenges. But yeah, look, I reckon the PowerPoint presentation that I delivered to you has my why. You know, I've been doing this stuff 8.5, nearly 9 years now, and there's no doubt days where, you know, this is heavy stuff. You know, I live and breathe suicide. I listen to people's stories a lot. I support people where I can. And I absolutely have days where I think, oh, gee, should I go back to being a glazier or what else can I do? You know, I'm having days where it's worse than it is some days. I know that I love my job and I know that I'm passionate about it, but it's heavy. And look, I share in my PowerPoint that my why is, you know, my parents. I want less parents to ever be bereaved by suicide. But my daughter is a big one. I often think about her and what life will be like for her in 10 or 15 years. And I certainly, every time I open my mouth in front of an audience, I'm thinking about her and thinking, let's hope that this shapes, that generation and shapes the world and makes it just a little bit more accommodating for her and her friends at 15, 16 years of age, and that it's a more accommodating and open society to who you want to be or to not judge you or to be a little bit kinder to you, because I certainly think that we've got a long way to go and, you know, letting people be who the bloody hell they want to be. So hopefully that education around mental health will be really important. But I think also those added messages around kindness and checking in on each other and acceptance will pave the way and, as I said, help that next generation coming through to just simply be who they want to be and hopefully make life just a little bit more easier.
The program is rolled out. I mean, we've talked about in my workplace as an example. It's rolled out in sporting clubs, but it's also rolled out in schools. What sort of age demographic are you starting there, Mitch? Like, what's the youngest sort of age that you roll out? What sort of language do you use in that?
Yeah, the schools program is grade 9 to 12. So that's funded by the Department of Education and the state government fund that, obviously. But we also run it in Catholic and independent and private schools as well. That's grade 9 to 12. Look, that's a wonderful program. We've evaluated that from the get-go, and we understand that students are getting a greater understanding of mental health, feeling more confident to help themselves or their friends after our session. We do pre and post evaluation forms with them. However, you know, the science says that more and more kids these days are talking about mental health or being more intrigued about it or being affected by it at a younger age. So, yeah, we're in the middle of developing a primary program, which will be, you know, probably from grade 4 to 6. It won't be focused on suicide, more so well-being and some simpler ways around our messages. And then obviously to follow that will be a grade 7, 8 one as well, which will be in the middle. So, yeah, we really want to get into schools as early as possible. As I said, I don't go into schools and deliver them anywhere near as much anymore because our team do that, but I'm still having plenty of conversations with parents and teachers, and they're all screaming out for more mental health education in a safe way, in an appropriate way, but for younger ages. So, that's a project that we're really working on, and we feel that with our brand and our following, especially from young people, we feel we'll really connect really well in that space. So we're really excited for that and understand that there's a really important need for that. So, just one of the 100 things on our list to do as an organisation, but one that we feel will be really important and continue to make a difference.
Borders opening up now. Is that something that you want to expand further, Mitch, like more nationally, I guess, once things open up there?
Yeah, it's always been the dream. What happens when you develop programs in schools and sporting clubs, you realise that there's actually a fair bit to go through to get them up and running, you know, conversations with schools and departments and whatnot, and you realise that every different state has, you know, some different rules and regulations and things that they want to focus on. So there's challenges that come with that. Look, I definitely think our sports program is scalable, and we're having some exciting conversations about that. We were having and getting to a really exciting stage, and then COVID rolled in, so that obviously got put on ice. But I believe that's a really scalable model, and as I said, having some chats about that. But my story, I jumped on planes and was starting to do a lot more of that over the last 18 months. They've all been sitting here doing them to a camera, but there's lots of requests and conversations happening about that next year. All I can continue to do as the person with the story behind this organisation is spread it as far and wide as possible. And like over the last 9 years here in Tassie, you know, if I continue to work hard as well as our team do, opportunities will come, and I know that it'll continue to open more doors for us. So, it's a really exciting prospect that the borders are opening up, and hopefully we can get back to more face-to-face stuff. And as I said, no doubt some opportunities will come from that.
With the face-to-face stuff, part of that's travelling. I know you travel all around the state. How are you finding that balance with a young family at home? Have you had to modify things there? Have you tried to reduce the travel a little bit? Have you compensated in other ways, like taking more days off? How have you found that balance?
Definitely, yeah. I don't know how I would have gone if I was set, 7 or 8 years ago, setting Stay Chatty up and having a baby. I was always told to practice what I preach. You know, when you start something new and it's got some legs and it's growing momentum, it's really hard to slow down. You want to throw everything into it. And I've certainly learned over the last, 7 or 8 years to practice self-care, and, you know, I've got an amazing team around me and my family, in particular my wife, you know, to monitor that and, you know, encourage you to slow down and recognise when you're doing too much and whatnot. But, absolutely, over the last, 20 months since Maya came into the world, we're a lucky family that we're well supported with people to look after and stuff, but it's more just wanting to be there. I'll cram if I've got to go to Launceston for a night. I used to probably go once a week or once a fortnight, but once a month now. And you value the importance of being there, to be there for Maya and be there for her as she grows up, but also to, you know, support my wife as well. You want to be there to help and wash bottles and bath her and do all those things that dads need to do to build connection and support. So, I've definitely shifted that a little bit, and it's not because I had to. It's because I just simply wanted to, and I think that's really important.
Yeah, hands on dad, Mitch?
I am, yeah. Look, it didn't start very well. I think it was about 10 days out from when my wife was due. I played in a cricket grand final, and my wife had never come to watch, and all season she loves sport but not a massive cricket fan. And right in front of her, I've taken an outfield catch and then dislocated my knee. And I just remember thinking, this is horrendous timing. I had surgery 4 days after she was born. It didn't go very well. I had surgery again. So look, the first three or four months, I wasn't very hands on. I was on the couch with the knee up. So my wife and mother-in-law and family did an amazing job. But, since then, I'd like to think I've made up for those few months. And I love getting in and helping. I think, being parents is a team effort. Look, I'd absolutely take my hat off to solo parents that do it. You know, what a challenge that would be. And remarkable people to be able to get in and do that on your own. But if you can share the load and have the opportunity to do so, I think that's, really valuable.
I bet you there wasn't a lot of complaining about the sore knee on the couch right afterwards.
Like
a brave man, I reckon.
I was pretty selective if I ever whinged if it was throbbing or swollen. As I say, it was shocking timing, but hats off to my wife, who did a great job.
No, they're amazing. They're amazing. Yeah. So, mate, you mentioned earlier about self-care. With the guests that we've had on so far on the podcast, it's been one thing we've really sort of talked about sort of looking after ourselves as dads. Every guest has had probably something a little bit different that they find their time out. What's something you enjoy away from work? You know, is it something a bit of Mitch time? Is there something that in particular that you enjoy doing?
Yeah, look, mine's a pretty obvious one. I mean, I love work and I love being with family. I love all those obvious things. But I think no matter who you are and how much you love your job and how much you love your family, I think alone time is really important. And look, it's I wouldn't say I'm the best at it because I always like to be doing something. I always like to be around people. And I'm also conscious now to try and find that balance that it's not all about me. You know, my wife has Maya far more than what I do. And look, I always say that 8 hours at work versus 8 hours of looking after your daughter, 8 hours of work, no matter how busy you are, is nowhere near as full on as having a child at that age for 8 hours. So I'm the first to say that mum's doing an incredible job, or whoever that solo parent is that looks after the little one. But look, I really value time on my own and getting out for a walk. I try and look after myself as best I can. I'm not the greatest eater and I don't play footy. I play a bit of muck around cricket, but I love going for a walk. I love just breathing in fresh air and I think that's really important. I used to be terrible at going for a walk and walking around the whole time with my head down looking at my phone, and then I'd get back and I'd have a headache. I'd still have worked the whole time sending emails and I'd have a sore neck because it was down the whole time. So now I will no doubt pull my phone out if I walk for an hour, but far less. You know, I really believe in just looking around. Look, in my presentation, you'll probably remember, Nath, that I said when I walk around, if I ever walk past someone, I've got my head up and I give them a nod or a smile. I think human connection and conversation is really important, and I really pride myself on that. So if I'm walking past people, I've got my head up and try and stay off my phone. But my self-care is just being able to get out, get some fresh air, go for a walk and spend some time on my own without my phone, because I know if I pull my phone out, I'll find a way to send an email or check my Instagram, and that is connection. And so sometimes connection for me is really important and brings me, can bring me back down to earth and just allow me to just think about other stuff, which I think is really important.
Yeah, it's a good segue into something else I was going to ask you about as well, Mitch. We did a episode earlier just about being present with our kids and just some traps that I think we all fall into. And the obvious one probably in this day and age is technology, you know, with the phones or iPads or whatever we're sort of doing, and it's easy to get caught up on a group chat with your mates all of a sudden, or you're checking footy scores or things like that. So's pretty good at pulling me up if I'm checking some footy scores or something, and something the kids are doing or something like that, and I get told pretty quickly. But I know little May is too young, but is it something as she gets older, something that you really want to implement and keep some set rules around that? Some boundaries?
Yeah, I definitely do. Yeah, I think one thing, being present. I mean, we've all heard it. Whether we do it or not is a separate thing, you know, and I know that I'm not perfect. But, yeah, I do. Look, every parent that I've met, and I was the same, you know, there's no way they're going to watch iPads and get on the phone and stuff. I haven't met anyone yet that has stayed pretty true to that. You know, it happens now and then. I think limited time is really important for them to be on them. I mean, we all don't want our kids to grow up and be addicted, so I think set times, limited times on it is really important. But, yeah, for me, look, I absolutely, I mean, we're not the strictest with sleeping, you know, like she doesn't stay up all night. Absolutely, we get our alone time and whatnot. But, I think if I want to check my Instagram or my Facebook, wait till 7:30, 8 o'clock when she goes to bed and then do it. And I think that's really important. And you do slip up. You know, I do find myself checking the cricket or footy scores or whatever, and all of a sudden she's tapping on your leg and she wants something, but I'll be pretty quick to put the phone down and tend to her pretty quickly, because I think that that's a really important thing to do. So, look, yeah, you're right. Communication isn't something that we do at the moment because she's too young, but I often think about, you know, like and I'm probably jumping in answering a question that you're probably going to ask me, but it leads into it around the whole communication and phone thing. Like, what type of parent do I want to be? And I think leading by example around that is something that will be pretty important to me. But I think one of the things that I want to be good at and want to be big on is open conversation at home, you know. And I want Maya, and if I have more kids into the future, I want them to know that no matter what issues they face in life, they can come to dad or they can come to mum and have that conversation. So I think, you know, if I'm telling them that, but on the other hand, I've got my phone in my hand all the time, what's that going to set from? How are they going to think about that? So, yeah, I suppose I am thinking into the future now to think, look, be as present as I can, because when I can communicate with her, I want her to know that I'll be there every step of the way for anything that she wants. So if she sees me being present, she'll know that I mean business about that and I'm not just, you know, pissing in the wind. So, I think starting early to let her know that I'm there for her is, a good way to lead by example.
So that philosophy on wanting to have that open communication with your daughter and talk about things like that, is that been part of your personal development, Mitch, in the last 8 years, or is that something, were you brought up in that kind of environment? Was it open communication with your parents growing up?
Look, probably not. Look, I had a good relationship with my mum and dad, but I think, and if you probably ask my mates, and you know, when we were that age, like how close were we with our parents to ever talk about things that really challenged us? I know amongst my friendship group, there probably wasn't a lot of that. I was probably a lot more likely to talk to my best mate's old man about how I was going. I was, you know, I didn't talk about girls much, or you know, going out, or if I had a sneaky beer, I didn't talk much about that with my parents. So yeah, look, as I said, it wasn't a negative relationship, it was a good relationship, but they weren't very deep. So yeah, I think that that'll be something that I'll really try and build into our relationship as a dad and daughter as we grow up, to for her to know that there's absolutely anything that she can come to me about to have a conversation with.
It's practice, isn't it? As much as anything, it's just it's getting into good habits and good routines, and so they're comfortable with it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I you know, I know that when she turns 13, 14, and there's girl stuff and only things she'll go to mum about. But yeah, I mean, all you can do is offer as a parent. I think that's something that's really important. And I've learned, you know, already that I think if you're just there and you're that option, then you've done your job. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's entirely up to the child, and they're all going to be different when they grow up. But I think if you're there and they know that you're there, I think that'll go a fair way to making a difference.
Are you finding now with little Maya, we recently had a new dad on just recently on the podcast, and he sort of spoke about when the newborns are coming home, it's a backseat role for the dad, isn't it? You're almost sitting back and you're sort of trying to find your spot and find what you can do to help and assist. Are you finding now, with Maya being that 20-month-year-old, that things are starting to come a little bit, swinging back a little bit towards dad a little bit more?
Oh, 100%, yeah. Yeah, daddy's girl. Look, I'm good cop as well. my wife's not like full bad cop, but she's big on, you know, some little things that I like. You know, if I hear her crying, I'll be the first to race up to get her, whereas my wife would encourage us to, you know, let her cry it out a little bit. I'm the type of pretty empathetic that, you know, if she's got a runny nose or she doesn't feel well, it makes me sad. I'm a huge softie. And because of that, dad's, probably a little bit of a favourite at the moment. But I know that can swing in roundabouts. But you're absolutely right, though. It was I definitely had thoughts in the first 6, 12 months, especially when I was not able to do what I wanted to do as a dad, you know, we were in lockdown when we had Maya, and you know, the only thing you could really do was get out and go for a walk, and I couldn't do that. So yeah, I really struggled in that first 3 or 4 months in wanting to be that dad and contribute, and it was a bit of a tough time when I reflect about it. But of late, it's definitely swung around, and daddy's little girl. But it's probably just because I let her get away with stuff, which probably isn't the greatest way to become favourite.
I don't know, mate, whether it's a fatherhood thing, or I thought it was the other day, it was just me getting a bit older, but I'm a sook now. I went and watched, so my daughter Miller just turned 4 the other day, so she had her first ballet concert on Saturday, and we went to that, and I'm sitting there with Soph, and Soph just turned around and looked at me and said, "Oh, I'm crying," and then she looked straight at me, and I've got tears running down the face, and I was an emotional mess, mate, and I'm looking around to see if anyone else is watching, and
It does it to you, though, and I think, like, as a dad too, it, you know, I invest more now in, and I know it's not great to listen to sad stories or things that hear the kids or unwell children, but you become a lot more empathetic to that, and it makes you feel incredibly lucky to have a child that's healthy. So, and I think that's only a good thing. It's made me more, you know, everything that we experience in life, I think it makes you more aware to the surroundings. If you've been touched by cancer in your family, you're going to be more empathetic. Same with me and mental health and suicide. But I think having a kid has made me realise that we should be investing as much as we can in them, and you should be really lucky to have a healthy child, because it's not the case for absolutely everyone.
You also touched on being in lockdown when little May was born. Obviously, we were going through the same thing. Obviously, a challenge for you with the knee, knee, mate, which wasn't great timing there. But it was a weird feeling, because we couldn't, and I know I've talked about this in the podcast before, it was strange because the grandparents couldn't come around. I'm sure it would have been the same with you in the hospital. It would have been only you in there and things like that. Parts of it were actually really nice, is the fact that we weren't getting visitors knocking on the door. I had some time off work, so we could have those days. Just, we had a bit of a ritual going where we'd go for a bit of a walk down the beach and just to do our own, we're in our own little bubble for a while there. It was actually quite nice. It was something something nice about that as well.
Yeah, and look, I don't have anything to compare it to, and I'm sure once we have our next one, my wife's got a massive family. My own family would have loved to be in there. I know that my wife probably would have wanted her mum to be at the birth. So there was a few things that weren't great for her. You know, that experience for a new mum to have people flying through the door and wanting to see the child. So that was all taken away from both of us. But in particular, I knew that my wife wanted that a lot. So that was quite sad to experience that. But the day we got let out of hospital, well, the day we got out of hospital 5 days after she was born was the day that Tassie went into full-blown lockdown. So, yeah, look, it was upon reflection, my knee's cooked. We're in lockdown, emotions flowing around, new mum, new dad. It was a pretty full-on time. But, I think, interestingly, you know, if we have another child, I'm sure family will be around. And then, but I have heard from a lot of people that time on your own was really special. And certainly they're the positives that we took out of it, that we did get our alone time with Maya. And albeit I was a bit incapacitated and all that stuff, it was still nice to be in our little new family and settle in for that first couple of months before people were allowed to come around and annoy us.
We've had a bit of a segment on the show that we've been running, and it's called Dad Hacks. Now, I'm not sure if you've got anything for us today, but is there anything that you've found, any little tricks along the way, mate, that you'd pass on that might be a good little hack for other dads out there?
Good little hack. Look, I don't have too many myself that I can think of. The top of my head, I remember someone shared with me, and I won't disclose his name, but he doesn't mind. He's got a couple of kids, and he doesn't mind as part of his work heading out and having a few beers. Goes hand in hand with the work that he does, or so he says anyway. And I remember we were having a conversation once about contribution and, you know, doing the best you can and being there for your wife and your kids and stuff. And one of his little hacks was that if he's out at a social event, which seems to happen all the time for him, no matter what time of the day, when he gets home, he walks in and he just starts washing up. And he reckons that's helped him get away with a few things. He just walks in, whether he's been out longer than what he should have or whether he hasn't. He walks in and he goes, I've walked in and filled up the sink and there's nothing to wash up. But the fact that there's soap, there's suds and water in the sink and I've got my hands in there looking like I'm ready, he goes, it's got me out of many potential difficult conversations. So haven't had to use that yet, and but I valued it and I thought it was a really good one. So if there's people out there that worried about that, yeah, go home and just start washing up and he reckons it's got him out of a heap of trouble.
Yeah, I know a few of my mates, they'll be straight in the washing up, I reckon, Bruce.
Yeah, so, I know.
I like that, mate. That's very well played, that one. Have you got a lot of mates that have young children as well?
Yeah, most of my mates live interstate. I'd say that I've got quite a few mates here that have children, but our group of mates that are a little bit older. But, yeah, most of my best mates are interstate. So, look, two or three of them have had kids in the last 6-12 months, so I'm really looking forward to the Christmas break to meet a couple of them and spend time with them and, you know, share dad's stories and all those types of things. So, it's going to be good. But, yeah, I mean, that's the greatest thing as well. It's been amazing for my wife. She's had a few friends around her and the kids are the same age, and that's really special that they'll grow up, the kids will be friends and the mums get to do stuff together. But same for us dads too. I know that we've had conversations and you ask for tips of each other and you can provide advice and give tips to your mates as well, and that's certainly been helpful for me, and I know that I've added value to upcoming dads as well. So it's good when you can share that journey with other people.
Well, I think that's probably why we started the podcast, to be honest, Mitch. It started off as a bit of a conversation between Shannon and James and I, and we sort of I guess what we wanted to create was that bit of a community where dads might be able to just, yeah, if they can listen to one of our podcasts, they might get just one thing out of it. And we've all got different stories to tell, and none of us are experts at it.
No.
Your story is very different than mine, and the next person is very different as well. And that's the beauty of it. I think something very similar to your program, I guess it's talking about things. You know,
yeah.
It's being open and honest about it. I think as guys, we've got better at it.
But
I think sometimes when you've got some mates in that situation with you, it can really speed things up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember when my wife was pregnant, I went off to a thing called Beers and Bubs, which was a thing at the New Sydney Hotel here where you get around with a group of strangers. I can't remember how much it was. You order a pub meal, you grab a beer and you sit around, and there was an old midwife, a bloke, and he ran through the process of birth and some tips around when the child was born and the next 6 months. And it was really great. You got a new speaker in. every session as well. Like a new dad would come in and share his journey and talk about answer questions and whatnot. I actually went back and when Mayra was about 8 months and went back as one of the speakers. And look, I think that, yeah, great idea on the podcast today for people to listen to and hear other people's journeys. I obviously think that sharing stories is something really important. I suppose my biggest tip to anyone is that every single journey is different. Every child is different. You hear of good sleepers, bad sleepers, kids that love the bath, hate the bath, love the car, hate the car. You absolutely never ever know what you're going to get, and you've heard people that have got four kids and they're all completely different. So I think just, you know, jump on the ride, support your partner where you can, but be ready to pivot, you know what I mean? I think be ready to be ready for absolutely anything, and understand that every single journey is going to be different, and ask questions. I've asked some of the stupidest questions ever that people have, you know, thought, what the hell are you on about? But at the end of the day, I didn't know the answer, so I've asked. I'm a big asker. So, yeah, if you're listening out there and you're worried or you think you've got a question that's a bit silly, bloody ask someone. Someone will support you through it.
Do you find when you come home, Mitch, from work, do you have a bit of trouble switching off sometimes? I suppose, as you said before, it's such a heavy, demanding role. Is it something you can come home and bounce some ideas off at home, or is it something you try and keep really separate?
Yeah, I do try and keep it separate a little bit. Over the years, I've been pretty shitty at it. Like, I'll go home and I'd be sitting on the couch watching The Chase and still have my emails open and firing out a few. But I've definitely got a lot better at it since Maya. There's no doubt that, you know, as a team grows as well, we've got an incredible team, but there's always things that we've got to deal with and think about. I try my best, and I'm not perfect at it, but I think I'm doing a much better job than what I was 5 or 6, 7 years ago. So all you can do is continue to do it. And look, I ask my wife to, you know, remind me if I'm doing a shit job at it, you know, like that's, you know, pull me up on it. That's work. Why are you sending those emails? It's okay to be reminded of it, and it's okay to remind each other that family time's really important, and especially when you've got, especially when you've got kids to be present for them.
How do you find things when you're talking about the loss of Ty, and you're talking about it regularly? How do you find time for yourself to grieve, I guess, away from that as well? Like, do you find it helps being able to talk about it regularly, or sometimes you think, geez, do I need to do this again?
Yeah. I think in the first 4 or 5 years, it absolutely helped me. You know, I don't know what I would have done if I didn't have Stay Chatty to really focus on. And I know that I still worry sometimes, to be honest, that, you know, one day if I don't do this, that my grief will, you know, surface and come and slap me in the face, and that I didn't really deal with it because I just focused on Stay Chatty. So, look, I talk to people about that. I do worry about that a little bit. To answer your question, look, I absolutely, most times when I stand up there, I doubt myself as to why I'm doing it. I don't do it for me, the presenting. I do it for people to hear a shitty, sad story to then want to make change to their own life, and then hopefully walk out of the room and feel like empowered to make change. So that's why I do it. But, I certainly grieve. You know, this time of year right now, you know, we're leading up to early Jan is his birthday, and then 10 days after that is when he passed away. So, you know, the start of Jan is a pretty shitty time for me and my family and those that knew him. So I definitely feel a greater sense of sadness, you know, right now leading into Christmas and that January time. But every year is different. You know, last year, I can't remember, but was probably really sad. The year before wasn't. The year before that was really sad. It's just whatever else is going on in your life as well can you know, make that really profound compared to other years. So yeah, it's all very different.
Yeah, we had Brad Green on. He was the last guest on the podcast, and Brad tragically lost his wife 2.5 years ago, and he spoke about his grieving process and questioned whether he'd actually even grieve, because his automatic response was, he's got two young boys, you know, so he's got to dive straight into that. And he wondered whether he's, even now, whether he's had that time himself out. So
I can absolutely resonate with that. I won't lie. I don't even think I've really said this before, but it does, you know, it keeps me up sometimes to think about, have I dealt with it? You know, like, have I spoken about it enough in the way, I suppose, less publicly? Have I done that? Time will tell, but look, I'm in a good space. I've got a lot of people around me. I'm not worried about it that I'll derail and absolutely, you know, lose it because I miss my little brother. I know that I miss him, and I know that I'd give anything to have him back. But I feel that this has been a good way for me to distract my mind, but also make a difference at the same time, which is good.
Must be nice for your family as well to have that. I guess distraction's not the right word, but to have a new little girl around at Christmas time must be a nice, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Yes. Christmas has a whole new meaning now, I think, you know, for her. And for us, Christmas has always been great with my wife and my family and my wife's family. But, absolutely, it'll be a fun time, you know, opening presents and all that stuff. As I said, it has a whole new meaning now, which is really exciting. And every year over the next 10 will get a lot more fun, that's for sure.
What's 2022 hold for you personally, mate, you and the family?
Yeah, for the family, we're looking to build a new home, so we're working on that. For me, I suppose, I love what I do and I'm still super passionate about it, but there's no doubt that, you know, every dream and what you love doing can sort of come to an end. And I know that there's an expiry date on the amount of passion I need to deliver this at a really good level. And, you know, I could stand up there in 20 years and still share my story, but I doubt the passion will still be there. So I'm certainly having some conversations and looking around at different things I do. I do a local radio segment down here, which is fun. I love doing that, setting up a podcast. I've started to MC a few events. So, yeah, looking to get into a bit more of that stuff, and I find it really enjoyable. It's good to not always be the stay chatty guy. So sort of try and build a bit of a niche brand in doing those other things that I feel I'm quite good at and enjoy. So, yeah, hopefully work on that a little bit more. But at the end of the day, there's so many things happening for Stay Chatty and I'm still a really big part of that journey. So I'll continue to work my ass off in this space for the team as well as, you know, doing some niche things on the outside.
So tell us a little bit about the team, Mitch. How many have you got on board now?
We've got eight. So, look, we've got exercise physiologists, lawyers, psychologists, and a huge array of people, and proud, I'm saying the word again, but just, you know, these people have given up their, not given up, but put their careers on hold because they believed in what we were doing. And, you know, Tash, for example, our community engagement officer, and our, you know, she's our senior project officer, she has a lived experience, she's a lawyer. She feels she's where she was meant to be. And, you know, for me, that's just, you know, absolutely incredible to think someone of her caliber and her skill and her passion, you know, wakes up every day feeling like she's living the dream by working with us. It's, you know, I have pinch me moments every now and then to think, you know, how good is this that, you know, what I created has given other incredible people an opportunity to live their dream job. So, yeah, we have a great culture here. We all get on really well. We celebrate the good things. We go down in the trenches for all the hard things that we go through. So it's a family outside of a family. And, we're really lucky, and I love coming to work with these people. And, yeah, it's a fun place to be. It's a good spot to work.
Mitch, I'm not going to hold you up any longer today, because I know you're really busy and you're in a really tight schedule. I've already changed our little time over another day, so I won't take any more of your time up. But I really appreciate you coming on today, Mitch. It's quite a story, mate. I was touched the first time I heard it. I'm touched every time I hear it, mate. It's and your strength and your resilience through it, and you've got a great message to share. I wish you and the young family all the best, mate, and a Merry Christmas. I'll certainly be in contact with you in the new year about getting you back to work. Like I said, I saw the impact it had. I think I'd like everybody in my workplace to see it. We do split shifts, so obviously there's another group that'd love to see it, but I'll certainly be in touch with you.
Yeah, no, I would love to continue that relationship. Thank you for driving that, having me up there. Look, I hope you and Sophie and the kids have a wonderful Christmas as well. And look, if anyone is listening and it's coming into Christmas, my message around Christmas time every single year is this isn't always a fun time for everyone. And look, I've just sat here and shared with you that Christmas for me personally is a fun time with the little one and family. It's also a sad time, but I'm certainly also conscious and thinking of those that this is a difficult period for, that have lost someone, losing someone, aren't having the best time ever. So if you know someone who is going through that tough time, you know, reach out to them and be there for them. And I think that can be the greatest gift that you can give this Christmas, to just be there, show a bit of empathy and show that you give a shit. I think it'll go a long way. So, yeah, thanks, Nath. Appreciate the support, mate.
Well said, Mitch. Good on you, mate. Have a good one.
Thanks, Nath.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Please subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening on and leave a review. Please be nice.
Thank you for listening to Better Off Dad.